On another exciting edition of Animation Deliberation, we are continuing our weekly coverage of Demon Slayer. So we've got Season 2, Episode 7, Transformation, and we will get right into that after some ads we have no control over. The demons are taking over, oh my god!
Da-da-da-da,
sing along if you know the words. A 1, 2, 3, it's time for Animation Deliberation. A conversation and a celebration of our favorite action animated series. Yeah.
Muscle, muscle, muscle.
Well, folks, welcome back to Animation Deliberation, the podcast that takes action animation and cartoons seriously, but not too seriously. I am back after a week off of Demon Slayer coverage, but I'm glad to be back. I am J. Scotty St. Clair. And joining me are...
I am Zuhair Ali, and I am overwhelmed.
And I am Andrew Rogers, and I am under muscled.
Not a good gym day?
Not a good gym day. You said, you know, you're always whelmed. You were overwhelmed. So if I'm saying muscle, I guess I'm under muscled. I don't know.
Well, I'll do my best to be flashy in that case. Yeah. Well, let's just get right into it. We have another, in my opinion, absolutely stellar episode of a phenomenal show. You guys took the helm and covered the chunk of episodes that we were covering last week, which I felt left off on a huge cliffhanger, but they did not rest on their laurels. They just pick up right from there, and we get an amazing battle between Daki and a transformed Nezuko, hence the episode title, Transformation.
I don't like it.
Beast mode.
Yeah, yeah. So she's got a horn growing out of her head now, a single horn. She's got some ivy patterns, like tattoos that are covering her skin. And she has proven herself to be quite the powerful demon. So much so that she's causing Daki a lot of surprise in terms of her regenerative abilities and her demon blood art.
They matured her upper half too, which is very anime of them.
I didn't pick up on that, but I'm glad you did.
I was like, oh god, she looks a lot older now. But yeah, that transformation was just bananas. And it, like, early on we were talking about how much we wanted more Nezuko and more of her story and more of her development. I regretted asking for all of that when, like, the sinister snark kicked in, which was like the cover art on Hulu too when you hit play next episode. Oh my god. God, did that whole sequence make me so uncomfortable. Like, Daki deserved every bit of the way that she was getting plastered, but from it coming from sweet Nezuko was like, no, somebody get her under control. I don't like this at all. It was so good, but so gruesome.
Yeah, there's not many things that really take you aback about anime. And, you know, when she's going off on Daki, it's like, okay, yeah, she deserves this. She's fighting. That's fine. And then it was just the repeated kicks in the same place and the crunching noises. And you're just like, oh, no, this is getting hard to sit through. It was intense in a way that made you feel it. Like, it was very well done. But I agree with Zuhair. There was a lot of uncomfortable moments that were specifically that way, but
she was having such a good time doing it.
I think that was the other part of it too, was that, like, she looked more to be enjoying it than Daki did to be enjoying all of her nefarious things that we've seen this season. Like, that smirk was sinister.
It was, and I'm right there with you guys. There was definitely a level of enjoyment that was unexpected, but I think it played well, especially considering kind of the trial that she has to go through after that. But just in terms of, like, the fight and what took place there, I was pretty delighted to have a character that was so... Daki really did seem to relish kind of, like, being so much more powerful and just having humans be, like, fodder for her. So I did get a lot of payoff in that regard, that the tables were turned on her so rapidly. But I mean, in terms of just shock and awe, you guys talk about the continued crunching the knee to the back of the head and whatnot. But when the Daki does get a moment to kind of fight back and actually decapitates Nezuko and all her body parts, I kind of forgot for a second that it has to be a Nichiren sword that kills a demon when they're beheaded. So there was a second where I was like, are they killing off one of the characters right now?
Yeah, that took me a second too, but it also seemed like she had like a heightened ability with her blood demon art where it's like the blood itself was actually holding her in.
Yeah.
So it wasn't like fully severed yet based off her abilities. So it was just a lot of like, it was a mix of like needing the sword plus her having a new ability that we haven't quite fully dwelled into yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm glad you cleared that up because I completely forgot about the Nichirin sword part. I only thought it was her blood congealing. So you two kind of brought that together for me. But the blood congealing thing was still a weird moment power thing for her to have that like hadn't come up before, that she could just have floating arms and legs and just kind of bring them back in after being decapitated like that.
Yeah, she took her time, though, before she, like, completely reassembled herself. So you have, like, this good moment where her head is floating, you know, like a half foot above the rest of her body. And you just have this wave of, like you said, congealing and coagulating blood. But then the rest of her limbs are there, too. It kind of reminded me, I don't know if either of you played the video game Rayman, or I think like the Raven Rabbit.
Oh, yeah.
Popular, but yep. He's got a disembodied, like, head and hands and whatnot. So
yeah, there's, like, no joints. It's just, like, the end of each appendage, I guess. It reminded me a lot of Kakuzu from Naruto, but I need Naruto fans to get that.
Okay.
You mentioned of like how she was like lingering there for a second. I think she was trying to figure out how to put herself back together. She's like, oh, this is fun. I'm just all over the place. Snap. Which I guess you don't have to worry about regenerating if you just bring the original parts back together.
There you go.
Yeah, it's probably a little quicker that way.
Yeah. We've seen Deadpool, the length of time it can take him for him to regrow limbs, so I'm glad we didn't have to go through that again. But I was waiting for Zenitsu to show up, and I was waiting for his reaction to transform Nezuko, and they held off.
I'm kind of glad.
I'll be curious to see how the show plays that moment when it finally does happen, though, if it's going to be one of those like more heartfelt and poignant moments, or if they're going to play it for laughs. I could really see it going either direction with that character.
I mean, speaking of, there's another point I'm going to dwell back to, but speaking of like going for laughs, like when the constraint was happening, Usui shows up and just yells at both of them. Like even while he like has her held down and has the sword in her mouth and is begging her to stop, like they still switch back to the animation of them with the dot eyes and just like little chibi heads of him yelling at them. Just in a little corner, and I was like, how do you make this so well done and so well timed to make me laugh in this moment where I'm genuinely panicking because I'm scared for these characters? Like it's just so good.
He called her a brat. I think that was the like, wait, you're staring at a demon that is almost as strong if not stronger than the upper six, and you're like, don't be so flashy, get out of here with that, sing her a lullaby, I don't care. Like how can you have that laughable sternness in that moment but it not feel out of place? I think that's the most impressive part, is feeling right in the moment still.
He's like, you were all flashy in front of the master and everything, and now you can't get her under control, figure this out. I'm just like, oh my god.
Hey, that's why you gotta love Usui.
Going back to like when she had her blood out and everything, when Dabi was beating her up, all the blood was splattering on top of her. So when she just found opportunity, she was like, oh, by the way, F you even more, and just lit her up to the point that she couldn't even regenerate. She was scarred so severely. I was like, oh, she's such a savage. That was awesome. I loved that part of it.
Yeah, that was really cool. And yeah, I'm glad you brought up that moment because it makes me think of two things. I think that's the first time we've seen her use that blood demon art since the fight with the spider kid, Rui, I want to say, when she used it to burn all of his remaining like spider threads.
She burned the ropes connecting them to the children on the Mugen train.
Good call. I forgot about that. But the other thing it made me think of is the fact that like Tanjiro has been embracing this
Hinokami Kagura.
Hinokami Kagura. Yeah, this whole burning move. And it's kind of interesting that you're seeing brother and sister both kind of embrace this kind of like flame heritage to some extent. But the other thing that stuck out is that it triggered a memory for Daki. And I remember she had one of Muzan's memories previously. So I was kind of wondering, is like, where is this coming from? Is this one of Muzan's memories again? Or is this a memory of her own? And how much more of her backstory are we going to get? And by the end of this episode, I think we find out there's a lot more to explore with her than we initially thought. But Yeah.
But I like what you're saying about where is this memory coming from, because I hoped and assumed that it was Muzan's memory, because I think it was the memory of burning. Mm-hmm. So I really hope that wasn't like part of how she became a demon. That would be a really unfortunate part of her backstory. But correct me if I'm wrong, in that memory, was it not a man and a child together? Okay. So if Jay Scotty, to catch you up, we were speculating, and I don't know if the episode confirmed or not, that when she had that first memory of Muzan's, it was Tanjiro's father.
Right.
Which child do we think it is with the father this time? Is it a young Tanjiro who doesn't remember? Or is it a young Nezuko that, and that's why this is being triggered, because Nezuko had something to do with her burning that first time around, or rather Muzan's burning. It could be interesting.
Or is it Tanjiro's grandfather?
Ooh,
yeah, for all intents and purposes, that man that we've been assuming that is the father could be even further back, because Muzan's very, very old.
Okay, yeah. I kind of like that you're kind of running with the thought that it is Muzan's memory, because I was kind of going the other way. I was thinking it was more clearly delineated as one of her own memories, because she didn't question it as much. She's like, remembered this last time that I was burned like this, and kind of made me think, I don't like to do too much speculation in the future, but it has me wondering who will ultimately end up defeating her, because we know Tanjiro always has these moments where after he's defeated a demon, you kind of get that reflective moment where they focus on how they became a demon and whatnot. I don't think we've seen that as much when other demons are defeated. Like, I think back on the Mugen Train and Inmu, when he was defeated by, I guess actually he was defeated by Tanjiro, but we just didn't get the memory triggered that time around.
Yeah, it was more of just panic and just how did I die and how did I lose to this? I don't think he just had any memories to go off of. Right. So we got to get into his head a little bit, but that was about the extent of it.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Stupid Akaza made it out, so.
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, in terms of how the episode went, I mean, you have Daki versus Nezuko in the first act, I will say. And the second act all takes place within these poor people's apartment, where Nezuko is triggered by the damage she has caused, has injured a young woman, and it really is a defining moment for her. We've seen her resist human blood in the past, but this time she can't help herself.
I did not see this coming. I'm just going to flat out say that at the top. Like, when she bit through the muzzle, it was like, oh, her mouth is exposed, and like, oh, what's that going to mean for her fighting? I did not see her losing control that quickly on another human being her downfall in that moment. Like, I was like, no, she could pull through.
I thought she was actually going to have some dialogue at some point, like even if it was just like cursing Daki or spiting her or something. But yeah, when she looked at her, I was like, oh, no. Don't go with that. Okay, that's where we're going. I don't like it. I don't like it at all.
I was so happy Tanjiro jumped in. Because there was also a moment that I thought they were going to let her actually attack the person, and then Tanjiro was going to show up. So I'm glad that we stopped it before that point, but that didn't stop the show from doing a very good job of making you question it.
Here's the thing, like, at that point, Uzui would have permission to take her out, because that's the condition.
Yeah.
Yes.
At that point, she would have been full demon, and it's kind of like, sorry, we had a deal. And he would have taken her out as quick as he took out Daki's head.
Yeah. But I think it just goes to speak like what a good job the show does of taking you on this like emotional roller coaster. Like, you have the fight with Daki and Nezuko, and as much as there was so much tension with the way that she has basically Tanjiro on death's door there, but it's, you get the relief of having Nezuko come in and make short work of her. Your relief is only so short-lived, because now you're immediately concerned for Nezuko, and it's as the struggle that Tanjiro was having while he was like holding the sword hilt or scabbard in her mouth there, and she just kept like headbutting him Right. And we know he has a hard head, but that still looked like it hurt a lot. I imagine she has a pretty hard head too, coming from the same family. But
I think she was going for the nose a little more on that.
Maybe. That's
and
fair.
I've been victim to those a couple of times in jiu-jitsu, and it's like, no fun.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, yeah, everything that Tanjiro was voicing, all his concern and everything, I was just feeling it the same way. It is nice to have Uzui show up on the scene, and he makes such an entrance. It's kind of like you say, you have Daki sitting there talking her smack. Once again, she never quite learns, and then he comes in.
She's just like innocently sitting, like with her head in her hands. She's like, "You actually cut my head off," and this and that. I was like, "Why is she still sitting there? Like, what's going on with this?" But yeah, like he like lectures Tanjiro and Nezuko really had their son's getting real low, big guy moment. Oh. the lullaby was beautiful. Like, it was the words that resonated. Getting that flashback of like her and her mom, and it's like, "Oh, did you eat red berries when you were pregnant with Tanjiro?" And I was like, "Oh, this is so sweet." And then the way that she was bawling out and how she just reconnected with her family and how like her original self truly was coming back and shrunk back into her tiny self. I was like, dude, that got me. That really got me. I was just like sighing in relief. Like, I felt like I was holding my breath throughout this whole session, except for when I was laughing at Uzui's moment.
Sure.
And then just back to holding my breath. And that was a lot. That really was an emotional roller coaster.
Yeah, I think they did a really good job of kind of making up for the uncomfort in the comfort that you felt of her just being such a perfect iteration of a naive child. Like you said, talking about the berries with Tanjiro's eyes, you were just immediately in that moment like, yes, she still is this kid that unfortunately had all of her memories of being an actual human kid cut short. She still has that underneath, that she's not fully a demon. So they really paid it off nicely. And then, like you said, the crying was really emotional, especially out of beast mode Nezuko.
Mm-hmm.
And then I almost think they actually made her smaller than her usual small mode, because I did an audible like, "Aw, baby Nezuko," when she shrunk back down. Like, she was so tiny in Tanjiro's arms in that moment. So it definitely kind of paid off, because you were at peace, even for a second. Like you said, there was a lot of holding your breath of chaos. That little bit put you kind of in a place where you were like, okay, it all paid off. It's all worth it to have gone through the turmoil and uncomfort of, as I'm kind of referring to her as, beast mode Nezuko, just going off on the rails. It was done in a way that felt justified.
I thought that was about the size she typically gets to when she goes in the box.
Maybe that's the in the box size, and I'm thinking of the usual out of the box size. She was so small. She was so cute. I wanted to just pick her up.
Either way, it's been a while since we've seen her quite so diminutive. So I agree with everything you guys say, but this really was like Nezuko's episode. As much as her going into beast mode was a defining moment for her, I feel like this was as much a defining moment, as much as she like made the wrong choice to go after the human blood. Her brother triggered a memory in her that actually like allowed her to have some level of grief, and we haven't really seen that. We've seen Tanjiro be able to process his emotions so much. It's nice for her to actually have that moment and see her shed some tears. And we learn later on from Tanjiro about what kind of sister she was, you know, when the grandfather passed, or was it, I can't remember if it was the grandfather, grandmother, but then the father, and how she you know, took her younger siblings in and said, you know, let's just cry it all out in one day, and then they would want us to not have our lives destroyed by our grief. So just really great to get that context for the character. I did love the mention of Tanjiro's red eyes, because that's one thing I've been meaning to mention about this series that I just hasn't come up yet. I love how every character has unique eyes. Like, some of them share the same eye color, but then when you look at the designs that's happening within the iris and whatnot, there's not a single character that has the same eyes. And a lot of times in animes, you'll have just different eyes on different faces, and they swap out different features to create these different characters. But it's one of my favorite things of the show, is just the level of detail and how much personality every character has on every, from their costumes to their eyes to just everything.
Yeah, attention to detail truly is a strong point of this.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. But outside of the stuff with Nezuko,
I mean, I think we hit everything leading up to the big reveal.
Yeah.
Are we missing anything?
Yeah, there was one line that I know you'll appreciate, Zuhair, that I wrote down. So we talked about how Uzui came in and sliced the head off. Mm-hmm. I love the fact that it didn't immediately fall off. They played into that anime trope of the sword came out, we saw the slice, and she's just standing there while he lectures Nezuko and Tanjiro. And he's like, shut up back there. Like, don't bother. And she's like, what do you mean? Why are you talking down to me? And then suddenly the head just falls into her lap. She's looking around like, what's going on? And he just says, shut up and die an unflashy death. How more BA can you be than to just look at someone and say that after you know their head's going to fall off in that moment? Like, that's top tier anime don't look at me moment.
Yeah. Dude, I was so fascinated, but so confused, because, like, she's quite the threat, and I was expecting Uzumi to have the big fight with her.
Sure.
Oh, yeah.
And in the moment of her smacking talking smack, he goes, you're not one of the upper six. Like, you're not the one I've been tracking. I was like, excuse me?
Yeah.
There's somebody more terrifying that you've been after this whole time?
Yeah.
There's somebody else that your wives were looking for? It wasn't her?
Right.
Where is this guy? Oh, thank you for answering my question.
Yeah.
This is terrifying.
Yeah, that line of dialogue definitely like stuck out to me too, and it was definitely setting up what happens next. But the last thing I will say is what I appreciate about the whole positioning of the head is like as her tantrum kind of escalated, her head went from being on her neck into her hands and then on the floor when she's full out just like going full on. We've talked about beast mode and baby mode, but this is her just like petulant child mode.
Yeah.
But yeah, we find out that the reason that she doesn't immediately disintegrate is because she has, I guess, he refers to her as his younger sister, so they're not conjoined twins, but they are conjoined siblings.
He could have been born like a minute earlier.
Oh, that's fair. It could be. At any rate, she got all the pretty genes, and he got all the ugly genes. Because, man, is this guy gross and gangly? But I love it because it makes him so scary. What is this guy's name? Gyutaro? Is that right? Gyutaro?
I honestly didn't even catch his name.
I didn't know he had a name. That's a.
I'm just gonna call him the freaky brother from here on out. But it's just so funny. I mean, not even funny, but like. You know, she's like all high and mighty and everything, and then she's like on her knees in tears. Oh, Nichan, they were bullying me, and I'm trying so hard to be a good upper six, and they're being mean and ganged up on me, and blah, blah, blah. And her face is still burnt up. Like, you can just see a straight eyeball, like, wobbling around. There's no eyelid for her to blink with.
Right.
Oh, so it's just like her creepy, but she's like crying out of this, like, undescended eyeball, and. Then you have this anorexic demon who's just like hideous, just straight up hideous. Like, oh my God. And he was like, don't cry, little one, just healing her face. And I'm like, oh no, oh no, oh no, no, no. This is going to be 5 more episodes of mayhem. I'm not ready for this.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. And to answer the question, apparently he did say his name is Gyutaro is how I would pronounce it. Gyutaro.
Okay.
Is that right? Gyutaro.
Gyutaro. But yeah, this does bring some merit back. Again, not to reference too much that you weren't here for, Jay Scotty, but we talked about how Muzan very much babied Daki. When he came in to have that conversation, he was very like, you're one of the best. I couldn't do this without you. Like, you are my prettiest demon, giving her all these compliments and all this praise. And Zuhair and I were like, what is he doing? We've never seen him like this before. This kind of brings some merit to it of like, okay, apparently, or I'm guessing, Muzan knew about this. He's like, I need to treat this child here with some care, hoping that she does do it. But if not, her brother is on the inside and is much scarier and will take care of whatever business. But like, you have to treat them both differently, or one's going to have a temper tantrum and you just don't want to deal with that out of your demon. So it's nice to kind of get a little bit more clarification in that regard. Didn't make it any less weird that she was having a temper tantrum and he was coddling her, but it did kind of help lend some light to this relationship that all of them have.
Yeah, yeah. Totally fair. His, like, first move right out of the gate, like, had me very, very scared for Uzui. Because you just see that slash, and you can't tell what part of his head was hit. You can tell that his head bracelet, I don't know if there's a better terminology for that headgear.
In Naruto, it's just headband. Like, they headband, actually have, okay. Like, the shinobi have, like, protective.
Oh, he has a shinobi, that's right, yeah, yeah. But you see the diagonal line across that, and you see the blood, and it's like, okay, is he dead? And then immediately, Gyutaro's like, eh, not bad. Even though I was trying to kill you, you managed to come out. Scathed, not entirely unscathed, but sustaining some damage. But it makes me kind of question the trajectory of the story. Do we think Uzui's making it out alive, or are we basically kind of killing off the Hashira one by one to make room for, like, a new generation?
I hope not.
Yeah.
No, that sounds... I feel like they have a chance in some capacity here, because as amazing as Kyojuro was, he was already a little hurt. He was defending all of these people that were still in the Mugen Train. He was defending a hurt Tanjiro, so he was almost fighting from a bit of a disadvantage.
True.
Whereas even in this little bit of a fight that we kind of haven't touched on yet, it seems like Tengen's actual fighting prowess is more than Kyojuro. Like, Kyojuro may have had speed and other skills on him, whereas it just feels like his shinobi training has made him a lot more relevant in terms of being able to fight not one but two demons. Although we have seen Tanjiro go toe-to-toe with Daki, I'm hoping that means that our trio will be able to fight Daki while he fights Gyotaro, and maybe they kind of manage that. This is all weird speculation and a way of me hoping and praying that we don't lose Tengen, because he is both an amazing comedic part, but also if there are more powerful Hashira, I want to see it, because it seems like I didn't think we were going to get stronger than Kyojuro, yet here we are. If they had to go head to head, I might take Tengen in that fight.
Sure.
I'll add on to your speculation, because I really like that about the younger guys handling Daki while he handles Creepy Brother. And I'll add on to it by saying that Akaza went toe-to-toe with Kyojuro as number three. This duo is still number six. So them together make number six. So
that's fair.
Uzui, the only reason he took that hit is because he was trying to protect those people.
Right, that's fair.
And the last bit of dialogue that we got from him before the episode ended is, okay, this building has been cleared up, and the first thing that he does is drop bombs, too. There wasn't even, like, concussive grenades or anything. Like, it was straight explosions. So, like, he's ready to go all out now that he's in an environment where he can just fall out.
Yeah, I think I agree with both of you that I prefer it go that direction, just because less repetition in terms of, like, story beats is more inviting to me. But I did, somewhere in the back of my mind, I could see, like, a possibility where the final battle ends up being brother and sister versus brother and sister. So it'd be, you know, Gyutaro and Daki versus Tanjiro and Nezuko. But that would mean that everybody else has to be incapacitated. So,
as much as I would like to see that, I think we're done with Nezuko. I think she has some thoughts to have on her own time. It felt like they put a nice little bow on her realizing her wrongs.
That's fair. That's true. And you mentioned the exploding, I want to call them Kamoyo beads, because it allows me to make two references to Marvel, and I just love to do that. So the Kamoyo beads are from Black Panther, but then Tengen had that moment where he used his sound power, and it was very reminiscent of the earlier iteration of Daredevil.
Is that sonar moment?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I loved that we got to see him use, like, a specific sound Hashira power, because we had kind of done the whole, like, oh, he can hear the explosions in the ground. I'm like, is this it? Can he just hear? Like, what's the actual thing? So to know that he has something more grandois that he can blink and know that there's no one in the building, that was a really cool both revelation and moment.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So out of curiosity, I looked up the list of the Hashira, and the first list that came up is all of them in order by strength.
Ah. Okay, so who's at the top of that?
So from, if you take out all of the formers, actually, you asked for the top. The top is actually Gyomai, the stone Hashira, the one that has the prayer beads that's always crying.
Yeah. Mm. Interesting.
He's apparently the most powerful.
Well, as the show has gotten more popular, I will say, I've seen more on social media people talking about Demon Slayer and stuff like that. And there have been some TikTok, Instagram reels, whatever you want to call them, where it's this Hashira versus this one. Who has better speed? Who has more stamina? Who's stronger? And then they go into that one-on-one fight. So the more that I've seen stuff like that, it seems like, at least I'm guessing from the manga and where people are getting this information, they have kind of flushed out everyone has the pros and the cons. So as much as he is the strongest, maybe that doesn't mean he's right to fight this demon because you might need, I don't know, the most speed. Because honestly, who else is going to stand up to Akaza if it wasn't Kyojuro, who is like denoted as being one of the fastest?
Yeah, I mean, just because you said like you were wondering where Uzui is for Rengoku, that's where I was like, I mean, if you want to know, I can tell you.
We're already here, why not?
Uzui is actually at the bottom of the list with Rengoku right above him.
Interesting.
So Uzui's number 9.
I'm really Rengoku intrigued for the rest 8. Of the show now.
He's a he's a cocky guy for being the bottom
he's
of the list.
Cocky, he's just flashy.
Okay, fair enough. Fair enough. Did want to make note of the fact that as much as like Gyutaro wanted to defend his little sister from being bullied and obviously cared about her and was a little peeved off about that, the thing that made him the most upset is the fact that Tengen has 3 wives. You're just like, 3 wives?
That's he reminded me a lot of Zenitsu in that moment. Like, he was saying the same thing Zenitsu was, but also the fact that he was clawing at his skin. Like,
I was about to say! That's the big difference. He was actually ripping his face off. He was so mad.
Yeah. I was just like, is he just like a super traditionalist and believes in monogamy that much? I think it's coming from a place of jealousy more so.
Yeah, it's just rip off and then you're watching it heal just so he can do it again.
Yeah.
Yeah,
unsettling.
I gotta say his powers are pretty cool though, the 2 sickles.
Oh yeah,
and then like he turns his blood into movable sickles. I was like, that's kind of cool. It's really freaky looking, but it's cool.
Yeah, the bones making up the sickles are a little still.
Yeah, it's pretty gruesome stuff, but it makes me excited for how much the tension is going to be ratcheted going up. But
God, I wish you guys watched Naruto. So many references.
Yeah, but we spoke a little bit about Zenitsu there. He's been asleep this whole time, but he's the one that, you know, tips Inosuke off that there is an ongoing battle so that they can show up right there at the end. But the only notable thing I really had about the two of them is that Inosuke is apparently a mountain god now, referring to himself as much. And then he talked about the god of the festival, and I have to imagine that's Tengen.
Yes, yeah. Early on in the arc, he refers to himself as the god of festivals, and then okay. Inosuke announces himself. Introduces himself, that's the word I'm looking for, as the Lord of the Mountain. I don't know when he got to be the god, but he used to be the Lord. He seemed to be
himself just for flashy sage.
Just to be flashy. He did seem very energized though. Like when they showed up, he was ready to go. Like
Yeah.
Not that he's known for being unenergized, but he was over the top, like, oh, we'll take him down. Let's go. What do we gotta do? Take Nezuko to the box. It's fine.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm ready for him to be back into the action. He is my favorite character, so.
I need more Inosuke.
Oh, for sure.
Nah.
The way they ranted is like, I'm here, I'm ready, let's do it. And before he would be like, don't tell me what to do to Tanjiro, to like, yeah, you got it, let's get right into this. Like, there's been a lot of character development in such a short amount of time.
Oh, no doubt, no doubt. But
very trusting character development as well. It's not the in your face, like, oh, obviously they're friends now. Like, it's subtle enough that he went from not listening to, yeah, I understand what you have to do. You go do it. I'll help here. Like, it's just that it's the way that a team would actually grow.
For sure. Very well said. And on that note, I don't know if I have anything left to say unless you gentlemen do.
When is it Sunday again?
So, man. Yeah.
I did notice that the Demon Slayer wiki has a ticker with a countdown to the next episode, and I won't pull it up right now, but when I last checked, it was like 5 days, 15 hours, and what have you. So,
oh, don't show me that.
Yeah, I didn't want to dive too deeply there because I was fearful of spoilers, because it's been a real joy to enjoy the show. It is tough to kind of like take it one episode at a time, where I was used to binging it, just because of the episode structures are so much where it like it just begs for the story to continue and you want more, which is a good thing.
Yep, but at least we have our weeks to just get giddy about everything together.
Definitely. Well, I thank you both for being here, and I thank all the listeners for tuning in. Continue to do so. That's TOONIN.
Try to get back to staying whelmed.
And bye, everybody. Muscle, muscle.